on the Rebel Sports Network from Learfield College. Live from Bailiwick inside the Orleans Hotel and Casino. Welcome to the Runnin' Rebels Basketball Coaches Show, brought to you by Chevron. It's proven no gasoline gets better mileage than Chevron with Techron. Care for your car. And by State Farm. Go with the one that's here to help life go right. Talk to an agent today at 800 State Farm. Now, here are your hosts, John Sandler and Curtis Terry.
We are at Bailiwick, back home. After a little sojourn during the rodeo, back here at Bailiwick inside the Orleans Hotel Casino for the Runnin' Rebel Coaches Show. John Sandler, Curtis Terry, and head coach TJ Otzelberger joining you. Got a really interesting and good show for you tonight. We've got Coach TJ for the first half, and then a little bit more of the behind-the-scenes look at Runnin' Rebel basketball as we'll be talking sports nutrition with the person who heads that up for us, and we'll get to that. We'll get to that toward the second half of the show. But first, we're going to talk basketball specifically. We're going to get into a little bit of the Robert Morris game and the victory that the Rebels had, 81-69, against the Colonials last Saturday. And then certainly talk about Eastern Michigan coming up. And then we'll be starting conference play before our next show next Thursday. So we'll have to talk about Mountain West Conference play as well. Bring in head coach TJ Otzelberger and coach. If I had told you that you'd be facing Robert Morris and Amari Hardy would get you 2 points and Jonah Antonio would hit 1-3 until late in the second half and you wouldn't have certain guys in the starting lineup, I would imagine that would have given you pause. But, boy, the guys who started, Marvin Coleman with a career-high 16 points and Jay Green played great and Nick Blair played really well, and the guys really stepped up. And I think, as we said in the postgame show, message sent, message delivered, and message received, we hope.
Yeah, I think overall, if you're going to move forward with your program, I think the most important thing is that guys respect your program and all the rules and standards that you put forth. And I think being on time for everything, regardless of 1 minute late, 2 minutes late, those sort of things, they add up if you don't address them right away. And so we want to make sure our guys know that the standard that we set as we move forward is high. We don't expect to be a team that's dwindling in mediocrity in the Mountain West. We want to drive this program back up to the top of the league and to prominence on the national level. You can't do that with compromise. You can't do that if guys can't follow basic standards. And so we're really making sure our guys understand that and they uphold that standard.
I thought your comments to us during our postgame interview were illuminating, but I think it even got more interesting when you had some time and were talking to the print media after the game, and you made the point that you are absolutely at this point, at this stage in the development and the rebuilding of the program, you're absolutely willing to sacrifice one game for the long term.
Yeah, and I think that's absolutely true, because I think we're trying to build something special and sustainable over a long haul. And I think if guys know you'll cut a corner, then they'll try you on a lot of different fronts, and then all of a sudden it's, well, you didn't do this when this guy was late, and this happened over here, and then you kind of have this losing culture and mentality that festers throughout your program. So our intent is to win the game, and we played the guys that, by their daily habits, deserve the opportunity to get the first crack at it. Fortunately, those guys played pretty well with great energy and passion and made some big plays, especially down the stretch. You mentioned Marvin Coleman. I don't know if, in this season, if there's been more of a Runnin' Rebel performance of a guy with the passion and will to win a game that Marvin displayed, for that game.
I mean, 100%, Coach. I mean, it was definitely a passionate effort that the entire team put out, especially with the last-minute changes to the lineup. One thing that resonates with me and it keeps popping up in my head, being a parent, as you obviously know with kids and those as well, it's like corrective behavior. You've got to nip it in the butt right away when something like that happens. And so from a prior Runnin' Rebel and former player, I appreciate that from that standpoint, because I know that's important to build a foundation. But getting back on that, that's one thing, making a statement with that corrective behavior as you did. What was the repercussions, or how did that play out on the back end for the guys getting away for a couple days, spirits still high coming off that win, and how did the team kind of chemistry unfold after the three-day break that they had?
You know, I think everybody gets a chance to reflect when you go home for the Christmas break. You know, everybody goes home and you kind of think about what happened. I'm sure for a lot of guys – What happens is you know, their family members sometimes think they might be the victims or think that we were making a, you know, using them as an example. It's certainly not the case. Ultimately, I treat the young men in our program the same way that I would want to be treated. I would want my children to be treated, and that's to hold them to a high standard. And I think for us, we practice early in the morning to teach time management skills. But if you're not disciplined to go to bed early every night, then you know what? You're not going to be ready to practice the next day. Every class is mandatory. Our guys put up a 3.26 GPA, which is the highest GPA that's ever been in our program. But that's because every class is mandatory. Every study hall is mandatory and goes on and on from there. And I don't think we can build a successful foundation if we don't hold true to all those things. And it's the same lessons I'm trying to teach as a young father to my kids, that nothing's handed to you. There's, don't take anything for granted. Appreciate, be humble, respect the opportunities you're given, and make the most of them.
I think that's absolutely terrific.
And, you guys.
The unteaching, the taking kids who maybe have learned a different way of approaching their collegiate basketball career, and trying to instill a new means of looking at it, a new means of behaving. That's going to be one of the basic challenges, and we're kind of going through that right now as you begin to rebuild this program.
Well, I think anytime you have a coaching change, there's going to be some transition, and I study a lot of coaches, football and basketball, and I think the thing you find over and over across the board is that coaches that build something. I was just reading an article today from the Baylor football coach, Matt Rule, that said, you know, like, he was at Temple, then he went to Baylor, and he's had success pretty early at both programs, but he said he didn't know when the winning would come. He knew that he had to have the foundation and the culture and the buy-in and the respect for the program, and once you have that, then you have a chance to move forward. And so we're trying to establish that first with our guys. That's how it has to be with everything we do. Respect, and it's more to me, it's more of respecting the players that have come before you, the coaches, the fans, the alum, the donors. By holding it to that standard, that's a sign of showing that respect and that buy-in to the program.
Is it more difficult today than it was even, you know, early in your career, which is still a good amount of time ago, but you're still a young coach, relatively speaking. We're not talking 40 years ago. We're talking 15 years ago. Have kids even in that stretch, 15, 20 years ago, in that stretch of time, have they changed to the point where instilling that kind of a discipline and that kind of respect is a little bit more challenging today than it was back then?
I don't know if kids have changed as much as I think adults have changed in the standard that we hold our kids to. I think, for me, what I see across the board is if someone doesn't play on their high school team, you go to a different high school. If you want to play point guard and the coach doesn't believe that you are a point guard, then you go to a different school. If you try out for an AAU team and you're not promised a certain amount of shot attempts, then you go to the team that promises you more. So I think as adults, we allow young people to run away from adversity and making decisions, and then we're failing them because they don't have those skills built in for the long term. And so I think it's so important, as much as winning every game and all those, you know, it's really important. I think it's more important that we teach young people how to make decisions, how to be problem solvers, how to not run when a problem sets in or when they're afraid of failure, how to embrace it, hit it head on, and be better for it. I know that's what's going to happen in our program, and I know as a result, the wins will follow and we're going to be successful. That's just how life works. But you've got to face that adversity. You can't be afraid to fail, and you've got to hit it head on when something comes your way. Hopefully the people in the support network of the young men in our program support that. If they don't, then this may not be the right program for some of those guys.
Curtis, I know you played for a coach who had that from the get-go. And you arrived here a year into Lon Kruger's tenure. And I know TJ, you respect Lon as much as anybody, as we all do. But that kind of approach and those things, those sort of pillars, they were in the program and they were almost unstated. I mean, he didn't have to say anything the way it was. And I admire TJ and what his staff is trying to do to try to sort of rebuild that culture here at UNLV.
Yeah, I'm over here just shaking my head at everything Coach is saying. I'm awake. I'm not nodding off, but I just agree because I feel like I've seen this, like, kind of deja vu. sitting here at one of Coach Kruger's coaches shows way up north somewhere. We were by Aliante, and he's talking about the same things. I've got to build a program, and you've got to make sure that you've got accountability and discipline. I'm sitting there like, I would die for this guy right now. Run through the wall for him, right, because those are the things that are important. And for me, and Coach knows this, it's about teaching these young men life skills so that way when they're done playing basketball, they can move on, they can get a job, they can blend in with society and the community and be productive in their lives because they learn something. Because the basketball stuff's easy. It's if they can come out of the timeout and perform the play that was just drawn up. Like, were they paying attention? Those small things, to me, is what resonates. And my first year was Coach Kruger's first year here. And we went through a lot of trials and tribulations. Yep. Some, most of them probably not as well known then as now because of social media and just news coverage. But we had two guys kicked off my freshman year, two guys kicked off my sophomore year. And it was just about, if you're not going to do things the way they need to be done, you're not going to be a part of it. No hard feelings. Great guys. It just didn't work out. But it took us 17-13 NIT. Next year, 17-14, no NIT until we had that success. But it was all the work that we put in prior and about building that foundation, because those are principles. I don't think if it's basketball, football, business, life, you've got to have those pillars that you hang your hat on every night and that you live by, so that way you can represent who you are as a person.
And, Coach, is it correct to say that it really it takes it to the level you want it when you don't have to do it anymore, your staff doesn't have to do it anymore, when it happens organically in the locker room among the guys?
Absolutely. I mean, I wish more than anybody that all those things were already in place, because if they were, we'd be more on track to win at the level we'd like to win at. And so, but I also know that if you don't, that what happens is you don't get better as the season moves on. That adversity, little adversity, becomes big adversity. That guys that don't respect each other and accountability to each other, those things come out late in games. They come out at pivotal moments. So what we're trying to do is build this from a sustainability standpoint over the long haul, not where one player or one player's attitude or behavior has the ability to blow up our whole program. We want it to be where guys are accountable to each other, we lead internally, and guys have that respect for our program. And I know that's coming. We're not there yet, and we have to get there before really winning at the level we want to win at.
One of the things, Curtis, and I noticed from the moment the ball was tipped in the game against Robert Morris is, despite the fact that you had three starters sitting on the bench, any time a Marvin Coleman or a Jay Green made a play, made a shot, got a defensive stop, whatever it was, the guys on the bench were all cheering for him. And I think that's a really good sign, because I didn't see any heads down, sulking, pouting, whatever you want to call it.
No, it's a good start. I hope that it's authentic and genuine, and that it's something that continues regardless of who's in the game. We have 15 young men in our roster. Different guys are going to get different opportunities. It's already proven to be true. Guys that weren't getting any minutes at the start are now in starting spots, and vice versa. We've had injuries with Eli and Jonah that have kept them out for a number of games. So everybody needs to be ready, but what it means to be a great teammate and respect our program is to give of yourself at all times. And if that means be on the bench, be engaged, and cheer for your teammate, be happy for your brother, then that's what the job calls for. And if we put you in the game, playing to the best of your ability as hard as you can with passion is what the job calls for.
Well, I will tell you that in my moving around town and talking to people after the Robert Morris game, and I believe, Curtis, you can echo this, I have not heard anybody say anything critical about your decision, the staff's decision, and the things that are going on. I think engaged Rebel fans understand the whys and the whats, and they are able to take that long-term view to be able to support the moves you're making and understand that it's part of building your program the way you want it.
Yeah, and I think for us, I mean, again, everything to me has, you have short-term goals, but those can't come at the expense of the long-term goals. And we're bringing in a class next year at this point that has five freshmen in it. Those guys are going to be the future of our program, and then hopefully the class behind them will have four or five freshmen in it. And so when they come in, the program needs to have a standard, it needs to have ideals, and those guys need to have the examples, so we're not having this conversation down the road. So those guys are leading this program, and everything's falling in line.
Yeah, it's we've talked about it numerous times. Unfortunately, because of the history of the program over the last 10 years or so, the fact that there have been changes and there have been efforts to rebuild, but I think that this is, for the fans and for us, Curtis, it's the clearest and most emphatic and most sort of highlighted example, starkest example of what's necessary to build the culture to get this program where everybody wants it to be for long, the long term.
Yeah, I don't know if that was a statement or question, John, but it triggered something.
You know me, it's both.
I'll throw it back to you.
All right, we're going to take our first break. We've got a couple of big games coming up to talk about. Eastern Michigan on Saturday. The Rebels will be at the Thomas and Mack at noon on Saturday. We'll be on the air at 11:30 with Run and Rebel warm-up. And then a week from yesterday, conference play restarts as the Rebels 1-0 in Mountain West Conference play will take on Utah State, the preseason favorites in the Mountain West Conference, at the Thomas and Mack, 8 o'clock next Wednesday. So we'll take a break, come back with more. With head coach T.J. Otzelberger, I want to remind you that after the game or any time, you can visit or click Findlay Toyota. Findlay Toyota is the largest Toyota dealer in Nevada. Ask for John Barr. He will do anything to sell you a car. You're listening to the T.J. Otzelberger Show from Bailiwick inside the Orleans Hotel Casino on the UNLV Sports Network from Learfield. I am G. College. Coleman out top to Hardy. Hardy back to Marvin Coleman. They're trying to get the ball to Blair. Marvin penetrates. Nice bounce pass to Ebake at the baseline for the slam dunk. Great penetration and interior passing by Marvin Coleman there, getting the ball to Ebake, who had a nice game as well against Robert Morris, 17 points. Marvin Coleman, a career-high 16. And the Rebels using a bit of a different lineup. Took care of the Colonials, 81-69. And now face Eastern Michigan coming up on Saturday afternoon, noon tip at Thomas and Mack for the final non-conference game of the year. And John Sandler, Curtis Terry, and head coach T.J. Otzelberger with you from Bailiwick here inside the Orleans Hotel and Casino, talking Run and Rebel basketball. Coach, you get an Eastern Michigan team coming in, bringing their basketball team. Their football team, I think, is on TV right now playing in a bowl game. And last look, they were winning. But the basketball team, now it's tied. Okay, thank you. Basketball team off to a record start, a record tying start. They're 9-2 to start the season out of the MAC conference. And it's one of those things when you look at matchups. You know, what do they do well versus what the Rebels do poorly and vice versa. You probably, from a statistical standpoint, couldn't bring a team in here that just pokes at the sore spots in the Rebels right now with the way they play. Is that fair?
Yeah, it is. I mean, they're first in the country at turning people over, almost 20 a game, 19 wow. and change, and 12 of those are live ball steals that they turn into touchdowns on the other end. And that's, you know, they play a 1-1-3 defense. At times they'll start with a 2-2-1 press. But at any time, two guys can just run at the ball. They'll trap the corners. They'll trap some on the wing. If you throw the ball to the high post, they'll try to poke it away and bring multiple defenders. So you've really got to have ball toughness. That's what we've been preaching our guys these last few days. Ball toughness means, you know, passing and catching with two hands, making sure that we have conviction, not allowing them to get deflections. And I think that's something that'll really stand out, is our ability to handle their pressure, to get the ball into the teeth of the defense, and then finish plays and keep them out of transition with those turnovers.
That's those numbers are intimidating. And this is a team that's going to play zone throughout. They're a zone team from the get-go. Is that correct?
Yeah, they played zone every possession all year. I'm assuming that's what will happen when they come in here. Of their two losses, they just suffered one, against a really good Michigan State team that carved them up a little bit, so maybe they'll adjust some things. But I don't believe they'll change their identity of who they are and what they do. So we'll need to do a great job attacking them, and not just attacking them conservatively, but attacking them to score and getting the ball to the paint and to the rim.
Curtis, from a point guard's perspective, you cross half court, you know, let's say after a made basket or after a dead ball instead of on the break, and you cross half court and you look and you recognize that zone. 1-1-3 is an unusual animal. Usually you see teams playing 2-3, occasionally the mirror image of the 3-2, but usually it's a 2-3. As a point guard, what are the thoughts that go into your head immediately when you see zone?
First, identify what kind of coverage they're in. Like you said, for me, a big thing is offsetting however the head of their defense is. If it's a 1-1-3, like we said, two guards up front to offset that. If it's a 1-3-1, two guards. 2-3, you go with one guard in the middle. That's just my personal opinion. Obviously, he's the coach. but, no, the quicker that you can identify that, the quicker you can get your guys in their situations. Because as the point guard, you're responsible for making sure everybody knows where to be and when the play is going to start, that they're in the right spot so it can work in terms of that timing. But if you don't got everybody there because they don't recognize it from the backside or in that corner, running around. So it's really just game management. But for me, that was always just watching lots of film and making sure, like, clockwork, you knew what you were getting into, because the faster you can get into it, the more time you have work to expose that zone. Because, again, people think, oh, shoot them out of a zone. Yeah, that's good if you guys that can shoot and are knocking them down. But on top of that, you've got to make sure that you're running the play how it's drawn up so you guys can be effective. So for me, I just kind of go back into rapid fire, making sure everybody's in the right position, make sure the ball is moving, but also just awareness, because shot clock is definitely not at the forefront because guys are thinking zone. So that is for me. Coach, I'm curious, though, with that, how does your scout team work in terms of, like, do they got 3 days to run as the scout team as Eastern Michigan? So, like, in their mindset is we're flying around and we're trying to create traps, zones, get deflections, or kind of how do you structure your practices in terms of preparation for an opponent?
Yeah, I think each opponent's different. Obviously, with Eastern here, we've had 3 full days. There's been points in our schedule during the year where you have 1 day or quicker turnarounds or maybe an off day into a 1 day. So we've had some more time to really simulate what they do and focus on attacking that zone. So we started it right away yesterday. We practiced at 4 p.m, and we spent a lot of time attacking their pressure. And then on the other end of it, they drive it at you, and they're very aggressive in their dribble drive system. Like I said, they're number one in the nation turning people over. They're in the top 5 in the country at getting to the free throw line. They get nearly 25 in change a game there too. So you've really got to guard the bounce, keep them out of the paint. And so we needed to start doing that right away yesterday, getting that scout team together, simulating their players, their personnel, and then really have 3 full days to get ready. We went a little bit longer the last 2 days. Tomorrow, not quite as much going into the game. We want to get them off their legs, but we need to be efficient. We need to be detail-oriented, and we need to be ready because it's going to be a tough game for us.
Yeah, it's a challenge, and I think fans sometimes don't understand some of the nuances that are required when you attack a zone, regardless of how it's drawn up. But I will tell you what they do notice. They notice when the ball doesn't move. They notice when the guys don't move. And we talk about, you know, cutting and the guys moving all the time and swinging the ball and all of that against a man-to-man defense. It might even be more important against a zone.
No, it absolutely is. I think any successful offense has a combination of ball movement and player movement. And those are things at times we get a little stagnant and dribble more than we'd like. And don't have that movement. And I think that also can become contagious, just like moving the basketball can really become contagious. So I think against the zone in particular, the way they play it, they go after a lot of ball fakes, shot fakes. I think if you know where you want to throw the ball, you need to anticipate the angle of where you're throwing it. And I think then you have to make a ball fake, pass fake, shot fake to get them off balance to get it where you want. It's really a lot like being a quarterback who knows where you're going to throw the ball the whole time, but you try to look off your receiver to deceive the defense, get it where it needs to go, and then make the play from there. And that's what we're going to need to do time and time again Saturday afternoon.
Turning our attention to the game after Eastern Michigan, and let's talk in general, because Utah State, we know how good they are. We're not quite sure of their health and Queta and where he stands right now. But let's talk a little bit about the Mountain West Conference as a whole during the non-conference portion of the season, because, you know, Rebel Star Conference play next Wednesday. We won't have a chance to talk about it before then. I think it's pretty clear, and we were talking off the air, that San Diego State has emerged as a real powerhouse and a team that's being noticed on the national level. Utah State, everybody knew they were going to be terrific coming into this season. I think New Mexico has a lot of talent, and they've been a little consistent. But what are your impressions of the conference thus far?
Well, I think to your point, San Diego State really seems to, as a team, their team fits together well. They shoot it better than teams they've had in the past. They may not be quite as big and athletic in the interior as what San Diego State we've come to expect, but they shoot the ball a lot better, and I think that's a unique trait. And again, they've had some tough non-conference games, been successful. Two transfer guards, veteran guards with Fegan and Malachi Flynn have really transcended their team. Utah State, like you said, we knew they were going to be really good. coming into the season. They've had a couple guys step in for them. Alfonso Anderson has really stepped in and given another forward with some versatility. So I think those two have kind of separated themselves from the rest at this point. Then, like you mentioned, on a given night beyond that, New Mexico's a team, when you look at bodies and length and athleticism, they have those guys, but yet they've been up and down night in and night out. The consistency's been in question. You know, teams like Reno and Boise have had some really good offensive games but have sputtered defensively to get stops. So, you know, I think it's really up for grabs. Those first two really have seemed to be the most stable and consistent. Beyond that, it seems like anybody on any given night can step up.
But for both of you, because you both have tremendous experience in collegiate basketball, we talk about it every year, that conference play is different. And we understand that you're more familiar with systems, although new coach, new system, there's going to be a learning curve for everybody. But what makes conference play different? The intensity, the games most often tend to be close, in conference play. What is it about conference play, in your opinion, that's different?
Well, I mean, you have those rivalries that go back over a number of years, which are special. You also have a lot of the players on the teams have played against each other growing up, whether it's on the AAU circuit or in high school programs. So those guys have that history there as well. And then I think it's by the time you get to league play, the cat's kind of out of the bag. Everybody's strengths and weaknesses are out there. Now it's time to go out and play. And so I think all three of those reasons play into why it's so much more exciting once you get into league play.
I agree 100%. It's just it's the familiarity with everybody is obviously there. It's the X's and the O's kind of go out the window because you know each other so well. But it's bragging rights. It's you know that you're getting towards the end of whether it's your career or your season. But also it's just about, I mean, pride. Hate's such a bad word. I'm sorry. I really, really dislike Brandon Heath from San Diego State, but he's also one of my really good friends. But we still always battle about that San Diego State-UNLV rivalry.
Yep.
Those things, I mean, are always there. And Bo knows about football. It's the same way. Regardless of how your season goes, you can always hold something at the end of the season. And good thing for us that the conference tournament's always in Vegas.
Well, I mean, it's nice. It hasn't always and certainly recently worked to the Rebels' advantage, but certainly it is something to look forward to, and it's certainly something, Coach, I know you point to, especially as you build the program, that you want to be playing your best basketball as you move into and through conference play to try to peak at the end of the year.
Yeah, I think that's the goal of any program, is to get better as the year goes on, to progress, and to be playing your best. I think as the season moves forward, that's the culmination of all that adversity, the hard work, the sacrifice in those things. And you'll see, you know, probably a third of the teams that kind of fall apart towards the end of the year, a third that might get better and a third that stay the same. We're really going to strive to be in that category. We're improving continually as the year goes on. I think if you do that, you know, playing your best at the end of the year, anything can happen.
Give us a quick health update on the thumbs and anything else that's going on.
Yeah, I mean, Eli's out for at least another month. It's probably even longer than that, truthfully. It was 8 weeks from the time of his surgery, so he won't be back anytime soon. I mean, Jonas is – I mean, he's cleared to play. Obviously, right now, it's not comfortable for him. It's thrown off his rhythm. But we have confidence in him that he can get it dialed in and kind of play through this adversity and be better for it. So that's the latest on those two guys.
Last question for you, because we know you need to get home to the family and say hi to the youngins. How was Christmas?
Christmas was great. Nothing better than having young kids and going through the seeing them wake up in the morning, the smiles on their face. Now, they get up a little earlier than we would like. We're not quite the sticklers at our house that Curtis is.
Enforce these principles
the Terry,
early, Coach.
The Terry regime of 9 a.m. or
8:15. They got us at 8:15 yesterday.
Good.
But before we close this segment, quick, Nicole, that you have on the next segment.
Yeah.
She does an amazing job for our program. She's transcended our program. She is unbelievable at the top of her field and such a great resource. So really take some information from her. We think the world of her.
We will have Nicole on. She handles all the sports nutrition for the Runner Rebels and other programs at UNLV. Have an interesting conversation with her when we come back. Coach, really appreciate it. Merry Christmas again, and we'll chat with you on Saturday before the Eastern Michigan game at the Thomas and Mack.
Sounds great. Thanks a lot.
Head Coach T.J. Otzelberger. Fans, remember the U.S. Bank is helping businesses grow, families thrive, and communities succeed here in Nevada and all across the country. U.S. Bank, the power of possible, equal housing lender, member FDIC. We've got Nicole Kiley coming coming up next. She handles, as I said, all sports nutrition for the Runner Rebels. Have that conversation for you when we return. You're listening to the TJ Otzelberger Show from Bailiwick here at the Orleans Hotel Casino on the UNLV Sports Network from Learfield, IMG College. Mario and Jonah Antonio playing catch. Jonah back to Hardy. Into Blair. Blair cross court to Jonah. Jonah, three from the right side, is good. That was a big three that Jonah Antonio hit against Robert Morris. Jonah doing a great job coming back from that thumb injury. Interesting coach talking about the fact he's still not really comfortable, still playing with that brace on his hand, and so it's still going to be a little while before we see the Jonah we saw very early this season. You know, he played with that injury, tried to play through it for a bit, and that's why the last couple of games he played, he was a little bit off, but it's going to take him a while. But Jonah is such a valuable piece of the Rebel puzzle. John Sandler and Curtis Terry with you here at Bailiwick inside the Orleans Hotel Casino. Runner Rebels getting ready for Eastern Michigan, a noon tip on Saturday. We'll be on the air at 11:30 with Runner Rebel warm-up as the Rebels play their final non-conference game of the year, Utah State at the Thomas & Mack Wednesday, to reopen Mountain West Conference play. Remember, the Rebels won in double overtime up at Fresno earlier this year on the 4th of December to win a road conference game. Double overtime victory up there, a big-time win for UNLV, and they'll see if they can defend the home floor against the preseason favorites, the Aggies of Utah State. But right now, change the tone just a little bit. We bring in Nicole Kiley, official title, Director of Sports Nutrition, something like that?
Sport Dietitian.
Sport Dietitian.
Yeah, come on, John. Sport Dietitian.
Sport Dietitian, okay? Well, I'm going to call you the Director of Sports Nutrition, but whatever. No,
hey, that's what I've been saying.
There you go. Welcome, Nicole. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Are you a one-person team? You handle sports dietitian duties for all programs at UNLV, or is there a group of you?
I do. I'm the main sport dietitian. Underneath me, I have a slew of helpers, though. We are fortunate enough at our university to have a nutrition and dietetics program, so we have a lot of hungry students that are looking to roll up their sleeves, and so I have a lot of help.
No pun intended.
Yeah, exactly.
So how does one get into sports nutrition? Were you someone, you know, when your brothers and sisters said they wouldn't eat their spinach, you said, "Now give it to me," you know, when you were a little kid? Was that, you know, was it?
Actually, that I was the opposite.
Really? Finicky eater.
I was a finicky eater. I was pretty into athletics, as you could imagine. Oh, were you a finicky eater?
Still
is.
I was very heavily into athletics growing up.
What sport?
Soccer and martial arts, actually.
Wow.
Martial arts being kind of my main jam.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, back away.
Yep.
And that transitioned, you know, into early college into a passion for just fitness and health in general, and reflecting back on what could have been if I had that nutrition piece, and so it just flowed right into college.
Really? You were that aware to think that maybe made a difference between, you know, where you were and the Olympics or something like that?
I mean, I think
anyone
competitive looks back and contemplates their potential, and that's definitely an area that could have been enhanced. I mean, my family is Taco Bell, Del Taco. We had a little Mexican joint called Happy Burrito growing up.
Where'd you grow up?
Huntington Beach, California.
Yeah, okay. No, well, Edison, where'd you go to high school?
Edison High School. Wow.
Yeah, all right. So it was the Orange County fast food network that got you through high school?
Well, it's the busy schedule, right? So your parents work full time, you go to school, they cart you off to practice. If you're on a travel team, you're driving hours back and forth, and so convenience is important, and I think that plays a role in my job today a lot, is working with students and to overcome these barriers of all their demands, because that's really the biggest challenge, right?
So how, I mean, I would imagine it's a multi-step process. The first thing is getting them to understand that Domino's, you know, in their room at midnight is not exactly...
Sounds like a great idea, right?
not exactly optimal, and it's not, especially with the morning workouts that the Runner Rebels do.
Right.
You know, the Rebels practice at 8 a.m., and if you throw down a, you know, an extra cheese, pepperoni, and jalapeno, my favorite.
It's hard to practice on that.
At midnight, you might be a step slow the next morning.
You're burping, yeah, at least. No, so, I mean, obviously, you guys all know, TJ's stellar. And I absolutely love the foundation that he's building. And part of that schedule is fueling. and he values nutrition. He values the grind that is the men's basketball season and the deterioration that occurs over that just volume stretch. And so the guys are required to be in the building for breakfast at 7 a.m., and we've got a balanced meal ready for them every day. We have lunch planned and delivered so that they have time to eat that and get to class, and then we have a catered dinner every day. I mean, we are very intentional about our meals, and that's what we push. You missed? Did you not have that?
No, I mean, not that good. we had an occasional training table, but
is it just getting the guys to understand the importance of eating the food that they're being provided, and not supplementing that with, you know, a pack of ho-hos and a extra large Mountain Dew?
Knowledge is power in the beginning. There's a lot of education up front, but everyone feels the difference quite immediately. Okay. And so the buy-in is, like I said, immediate. And there's a lot of ways to the mountaintop. We don't have to eat rabbit food to get there, right? And so I work one-on-one with the guys, and we find what their preferences are, and we make sure that that's on the menu, and we make sure that that's a part of the spread. And then they have foods that they enjoy that are also optimal.
So who's the pickiest, or who's the most troublesome guy?
No,
for real.
I die with that.
Let's go this way. You've got guys from different parts of the country and different parts of
yes,
the world.
Yes.
And so the foods from those cultures or from those mm-hmm. regions that they grew up with, they're going to impact what they
That is very true, and that exists. That dynamic absolutely exists. We have people that don't like sandwiches and people that won't eat pork for religious reasons.
Sure.
And yeah, they definitely,
I respect that.
It definitely complicates.
Who doesn't like sandwiches
things?
Though?
Variety is
sandwiches?
Important.
Give us examples of struggles that you've had with getting guys on board to make the change, even though like you see it, you feel it. How mm-hmm. do you get them to make that change?
So
like, what are some of your tricks that you use?
Yeah. So some of the challenges that you have, obviously you have people that have limited preferences, which is a challenge, but we can get through that. Other guys' challenges are if they actively need to be putting on mass or putting on size and they're getting an extra workouts,
right.
It is hard to get 4,500 calories a day, 5,000. I mean, that is hard. You have to work at it. And that requires a lot of intention. So
Bo's looking hungry.
It's not hard for all of us, I guess.
4,500
calories. Not all of us.
It's not that hard, trust me.
Well, this is how it works, right? So if they wake up at 7 and they've got obligations till 10, and their class starts at 10:30, and they get out of class, and they come back for athletic training, you can see how you've got limited windows
sure.
of opportunity to fuel properly. And so that's a major challenge. So helping guys find that schedule and build that in is a huge part of my job.
And as we said, making that fueling a priority mm-hmm. and something they think about. I mean, most 19-year-old kids, let alone a little older than that, you know, it's see it, need it, and I'm hungry, I'm going to go get uh-huh. something to eat.
I'll tell you my favorite eater, Shekna.
Oh, yeah.
He's down for anything. Yeah. He loves nutrient-dense food. He's always the first one to the meal. He always has a smile on his face. He always says, thank you, Miss Nicole. He is like my fave.
Fly by the seat of his pants like him. He reminds me a lot of Joel Anthony, who yeah. in terms when I played was he was the one who was eating everything at training table. Like he would clean up. He'd go to the dining commons 4 times a day, swipe, run out of swipes with 2 weeks left before the month is over and use yours.
Did you know that we're opening up our first training table?
Wait, what?
Did you know that?
Who's we?
UNLV.
What do you mean?
So,
I don't know.
Yeah, so the Fertitta Football Complex obviously was just built, and in there is a state-of-the-art full dining hall kitchen. And starting spring 2020, we're now going to serve breakfast to all of our student athletes.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So it's a huge step in the right direction. That's what all major Division I's are doing. So
that is absolutely terrific. You know, I think folks sometimes don't understand completely the backgrounds some of these kids come from.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned Shekna. Obviously, he comes from a foreign country. But I know for a fact there have been kids at UNLV who, in high school, struggled to get more than one meal a day.
Mm.
And when they came to UNLV, the idea of eating more than once a day was almost like a foreign concept to them. And you're going to see that, I think, as you go through your career. The importance of nutrition, making it top of mind, what are some things? I mean, you can talk to kids and you can talk at them.
Right.
But you mentioned that the results of improved nutrition and that fueling are noticeable. Can you give us some anecdotes where someone has said to you, I feel so much better, or I feel different, or I see a change, or anything like that, where
Absolutely.
That recognition has happened?
Absolutely. And going off of what you just said, my pitch is not going to be, this is anti-aging, it's fighting free radicals, right? The selling point is what they care about. And so, for example, we've done a lot of hydration testing with men's basketball. That, with just as little as 2% dehydration, we see decreased reaction time, poor cognitive function, higher injury risk, poor stamina, et cetera, right? And so we were able to customize that recommendation, and guys immediately feel improved endurance and stamina at the second half of practice, and those practices are competitive.
Yes.
They're exhausting.
And they're intense. Yeah.
They're intense. And so if you're dehydrated in any aspect, you're going to have poor performance. So I think that they just see that immediate change, and now they're listening, right? So I always start with hydration because that's very tangible. The breakfast is another great example. And I think just helping the guys reflect on muscle soreness, improved sleep, better numbers in the weight room. So I collaborate a lot with Cabo to help the guys see that improved lean body mass and increased strength and things like that. So those are more tangible items.
It's a team effort.
Exactly.
Because it all goes hand in hand, nutrition, conditioning, strength and endurance, and practice and all that stuff.
And the coaches reinforce it. And that impact starts from the top down. If TJ doesn't value that and the assistant staff doesn't value that, we're never going to make it happen. They do value that. So that's very fortunate for me.
I think that's terrific. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back with more from Nicole Kylie, the sport dietitian. I apologize. For the Runner Rebels. Fans, remember that... If getting you back in the zone, if you need to get the job done fast, AutoZone can help. Visit AutoZone.com and start the job with a free next-day delivery or free same-day store pickup. Get in the zone, AutoZone. More of the TJ Otzelberger Show from Bailiwick inside the Orleans Hotel Casino on the UNLV Sports Network from Learfield, IMG College. Hardy drives left side. Hardy cross-court to Coleman. A three for Marvin from the right side. Why not? Marvin Coleman having a game. Marvin unofficially now with 11 points. I believe, 14 points. That's career high for Marvin Coleman. Went on to finish with 16 and helping the Rebels run the point, and helping the Rebels to the victory over Robert Morris. Running Rebels back in the Thomas and Mack Saturday afternoon, a noon tip against Eastern Michigan. So while you're out returning gifts, the socks and the scarves and the ties and all the stuff you really didn't want, or the stuff that doesn't fit or what have you, stop by the Thomas and Mack and come catch some Runner Rebel basketball on Saturday. John Sandler, along with Curtis Terry and Nicole Kylie, sports dietitian.
There we go.
For Runner Rebel athletics, and talking about the nutrition and the fueling of the Runner Rebel basketball team. All right, Nicole, we talked about the fact that there are individual diet plans, fueling mm-hmm. plans, whatever we call them, nutrition plans for individual players. Without mentioning names, mm-hmm. give us an example, if you can, from your memory, of how to of those plans might differ.
Well, let's just use an example of someone injured versus someone playing full game. I mean, that's going to look a lot different, right? And so, for example, David Jenkins, he's on the slow play. We're able to customize a plan over the long haul for him to peak next year. So for him, for example, what that would look like is much more sustainability, much more balance. His meals throughout the day can be much more consistent because he doesn't have to necessarily worry about timing of digestion and things like that, right? Versus Mbake, right? Super tall, lots of caloric output, and needs to feel good. Yeah. And needs to recover, and that's a sticky line because you can't eat too much before a game, but then you need enough calories that you don't conk out. It's tricky. And so the way that I go about it is I get a full medical background. I work very intimately with both the medical doctor, the sports psychologist, the athletic trainer, and Cabo, our strength and conditioning coach, to kind of get a holistic picture of what we're working with. And then I build out what a day might look like for that athlete, and I help them see what that would look like. And it's not realistic for them to follow a specific meal plan. That's just not sustainable at all. So empowering them to understand what that meal looks like allows them to be very flexible and make decisions wherever they go that fit that, if that makes sense. So when we cater in meals, they know I need this many scoops of starch, this many scoops of protein, right, et cetera.
Would that have helped you, Curtis, do you think, back in the day when you were playing?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Now being an adult and understanding, for sure. But, if, I mean, had I known then what I know now, I'd be in a much better spot.
You might have been dangerous.
What do you mean might have been, John?
All right, what about the future of these types of program, this program specifically at UNLV? You mentioned the dining hall. All student-athletes are going to have breakfast in the new facility, the new LEAD facility, or new Fertitta facility, I should say. But what else is included in the future, and how can fans get involved?
Oh, man. It's exciting. It's really, really exciting, because not only do we have a situation that the coaching staff values nutrition, but our athletic director is all about holistic services. And so support is coming in all directions for me, so it makes my job great. I'm sorry?
No, go ahead.
Oh. So, anywho, the way that we're customizing men's basketball, to their benefit, they're a smaller team. So it can be very concierge, right? So we can do these one-on-one consults. We can have a lot of travel nutrition support. I can work very intimately with the director of ops to make sure that there's catering and all that kind of stuff. We can have very targeted supplements that fight inflammation, that promote recovery, that kind of stuff. We have, you know,
the sky's the limit. Yeah,
if budget isn't an issue, we can go to town, right?
Right.
And that's what Division I programs do. Yeah. So that's what we're going to do. That's what we're doing.
I love it. I love it. It's great, and we really appreciate you coming by, Nicole, handling the sports dietitian duties for the Runner Rebels and keeping them in great shape. Rebels back in the Thomas and Mack Saturday, 11:30 pregame, noon with the tip for Coach, for Nicole, for Curtis, for Nick, and Ari back in our studios. And for all of you here, thanks for listening. A belated Merry Christmas, early Happy New Year. We'll talk to you on Saturday afternoon. Have a great evening, everybody.
Casino, you've been listening to the Runnin' Rebels Basketball Coaches Show, brought to you by State Farm. Go with the one that's here to help life go right. Talk to an agent today at 800-STATE-FARM. And by Chevron. It's proven. No gasoline gets better mileage than Chevron with Techron. Care for your car. The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Rebel Sports Network.